This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 86, where we're going to talk about the latest cloud news, news from Google, Apple, and Windows Phone, recorded live July the 8th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Good morning, AC.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Pretty good, buddy. How about you?
I'm still tired.
You had a little bit of a late night with another good friend of ours, Jeremy Thake, at the NASCAR right here.
We did. Jeremy came down. He never been to a NASCAR race. It's been 15 years since I've been to one, or 15 plus years. And so I invited him to come on down. He stayed with my family. I wonder if it was really a good idea to invite him into my house. But no, I'm kidding. We had a good time. I took him out to the beach. We had an epic storm roll in on July the 4th. It never got us, but it was like end of days kind of a storm. It was awesome.
Nice. Yeah. Well, he got the full Florida experience then.
Oh, he totally did. And then we went to the NASCAR Pepsi 400 on July the 5th. Race was supposed to start at 7:45 at night, and due to a rain delay, it didn't start until 11:45 at night, finished around 2:55 in the morning.
Good God.
And by the time we got back to our hotel, it was close to 4 a.m. So it was, I'm still dragging a bit.
Brutal. But it sounds like fun going to a car race, so it can't have been all that bad.
Oh, no, it wasn't bad at all. I mean, we're both race fans. I mean, you're a race fan as well. And it was just let's go to a NASCAR race. We're not huge NASCAR fans. And I tell you, I mean, going to the race too, it just solidified it more that IndyCar has got the best racing product out there. And I know that F1 had a good kind of first quarter of the race this past weekend for Silverstone out of the British F1. Mm-hmm. But man, IndyCar is just, it is so much more
good.
Yeah, it's just consistently so much more racy than everybody else.
Yeah. I have to go to one. I haven't been to one yet.
Oh, it's great. I'm trying to get you to come down to the St. Pete one. I call it Mini Monaco.
Oh yeah, I'd love to.
Right on the water, man. Right on the water. So how about you? How are you doing?
Good, mate. Heading off to WPC shortly, and which I guess by the time this show comes out, we will be, it may be even over. We're recording this a little ahead of time than we normally would. So I think this show may come out maybe the week of WPC. Mm. So I will be in sunny Orlando, sweating. Like, you know, I'm up from Washington and not really used to the Florida weather. So I suspect I will get off the plane and be like, well, having said that, we've been having 90 to 100 degree days here, so that's like I guess that's like 28 to 33 for real units.
Oh, blah blah blah.
But I like just to rub it in. But yeah, no, not too bad. Hey, and I picked up a little gadget. I thought I'd talk to everybody about. It's called the Nuelec, and it's a DVB-T/ADS-B receiver. And if you know anything about aircraft, they transmit position information on ADS-B. You need an ADS-B receiver to pick it up. And this is what powers the likes of FlightAware.com and FlightRadar24.com, things like that. Anyway, so I've got a little USB stick and an antenna picked up for $20 on Amazon. And you can pair that with a Raspberry Pi, and they give you an image that you flash onto your Raspberry Pi or put on your Raspberry Pi. And you can hook it all up and receive data about airlines flying around over you. Huh. And then the cool bit is on Flight Radar, I think that's it. Flight Radar 24, I think it is. You can sign up. They'll give you a premium account for that website if you provide them data. And so they give you a Raspberry Pi image. You put it on your Raspberry Pi. You plug the little USB stick into it. You stick it in a nice window where you could see stuff. And it will pick up airline position and direction and speed data. and then provide it to Flight Radar 24, and they'll give you a premium account for the privilege. So they sort of crowdsource flight information, and that does all the real-time mapping of flights and stuff, so you can go see what's flying over your house.
Huh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so if you ever wondered where all that data comes from, part of it is from the FAA, and then part of it is also from crowdsourcing. And you can either build your own antenna like this by buying a couple of components and wiring it all up, or if you're in a location where they don't have great data, they will send you for free some hardware, and you just plug it into your internet connection, and it uploads flight data to their system, and they'll give you a premium account for it.
No way.
So yeah, you fill in a form and you say where you are, you give them your latitude and longitude. You take photos of your house and where you'd put the outdoor antenna, whether you've got trees nearby, what your field of view looks like, all of that. And then they make a decision on whether they will provide you free hardware to do it.
That's pretty cool.
It's nice. Yeah.
That's a fun little toy.
Yeah. It's of absolutely no use to me, but it's it's really interesting, right? Like, I really don't need to know this, but it is fascinating to watch what's flying around overhead.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's always interesting to see how like that flight aware stuff, when you go there and see all the planes that are in the air, and then like at different times of day and where's the most trafficked area and stuff. So
yeah, so go if you want to know more, go to flightradar24.com, and then in the How It Works section under the About menu, you can read all about ADS-B. And the, you know, how they pick up, you know, how it works up, how they get this stuff from the transponders, and how it all sort of gets crowdsourced and pulled in. And then down the bottom of that page is if you want to build your own or host a receiver, then you can click through and it'll tell you how to get involved.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, speaking about Raspberry Pi stuff, I guess I have a little thing too. I picked up for $7 on Amazon. It's called a SSR, or solid state relay.
Oh, cool.
And so basically what you do is these, and I'm showing it to CJ here on the screen, but it's these little blue boxes. They're little relays. And so what happens is, yep, like it sits in between a power circuit between like whatever the source power is and where what you're trying to power. Like, let's just say it's going to be like a lamp. Then it's got other little pins on it that I can connect to a Raspberry Pi, write a little program. And what I'm going to use this for with the this is a 4-port SSR. But I got, what I'm going to do is I have a 3-zone sprinkler system, irrigation system at my house.
Right.
So I'll have a 24, I have to figure out how to, the solenoids that fire off the different zones are they're 24 volt solenoids, and so I have to figure out how to power the solenoids off 24 volts and the Raspberry Pi off just 5 volts. But I really want to do it with just one power source, and so I have to find a way to bring the power in and then step it down to the Raspberry Pi, and then have another one go out. So I found a guy that he documented how he did it. And I started reading it. It's all this engineering schematics and stuff. And I'm just like, does anybody have something on Amazon for like $10 that I can get?
Dude, seriously, there probably is. Oh, probably something like that.
Yeah, I got to go search for it.
Hey, what you've got to do, you've got to report back to us once you've got the Node.js Angular and TypeScript driven website that controls your sprinklers. So here's an idea for a show. Live, you're going to run the website. I'm going to log into it and turn your sprinklers on, and then we're going to record it. You're going to walk outside with a phone, and you're going to record me turning on and off the sprinkler system.
We could totally do that, because sitting here at my office, I could tell you to turn on a specific zone, and I could just pop out the little GoPro and have a video pointing down and just say, hey, look, you can see out the window. You can see the sprinklers just turned on.
Sweet. Let's do it.
But it's going to get even better though. I'm going to make this actually work applicable. So
come on.
Here we go.
Are you going to schedule your sprinkler system in your Office 365 calendar? Because that'd be cool.
Yes, I am, actually. It's going to have a group, and every time the sprinklers turn on and off, it's going to send an email to the group so that I can go through and subscribe, and I can see a log of all the stuff coming across.
Classic.
Yeah. So it'll be fun.
Nice. That sounds like a fun project.
Yep.
So I'm going to track flights, and you're going to turn on and off your sprinkler system.
Yep, all with a pie.
Nice.
Love me some pie.
Hey, we should probably get on to some news.
Yeah, I guess so. We've been kind of going back and forth about 10 minutes here, so let's do some news.
Yeah, excellent. So we've got a couple of things to get through. We've got some Apple news, some Apple speculation. We've got some Windows Phone news, some cloud stuff around Azure and Google. So why don't we get stuck in? Do you want to kick it off?
Sure. I'll do the first one. How about the Apple news?
Yeah, sure. What's that all about?
There's nothing official from Apple here, this has been widely reported, at least today. Today's July the 8th, but it's been widely reported between a bunch of different leading, I guess, trustworthy sites, including MarketWatch. But there's a couple companies that track sales of consumer electronics, and they've done a pretty good job tracking this stuff in the past. But what this company has done, so the company is called Slice. What they've done is they've looked at a moving 7-day average of the Apple Watch sales since it's been released. And from the opening day of when they were selling about 200,000 watches per day, there was a huge drop off almost immediately, down to about 20,000, down to about 10% of what they were originally selling. And it hovered kind of around 20,000, but in the second half of June, it's fallen off to where it's just a couple thousand per day, which is really a drop of 90% since the opening week. I've heard lots of reports of people haven't seen watches showing up on eBay, on Craigslist. They're just saying it's a novelty. They're not really using it like they thought they would.
You know, I had a friend that is in the same boat. You know, he's gone back to his analog regular watch, and I think he just got like the middle of the range Apple Watch and to try it out, and thought there were a few interesting functions, like a few interesting things that he used it for, but nothing that meant that it was a must have on his wrist, you know. And he went back to his analog watches.
No, it wasn't something that I felt like I had to go get. I mean, it was something I looked at and was like, hey, it's nice looking, but wasn't going to be a replacement for me. The same company, they said that the majority of the watches, fully 2/3 of them, have been for the sport version, which is the $350 model, not nearly as many of the $549 model. And then the other part of this news was that Apple has sold less than 2,000 of the $10,000 version. So I know there's been some rumors and speculation about an update to the watch later this fall about native apps and stuff. So it's interesting. It's geeky kind of stuff. Thought that the listeners might find it interesting, but
well, here's the thing, right? First up, I've got no idea how they track this, right? They probably have people sitting outside stores watching what's going on, and that's typically how these retail analysts do it, as far as I'm aware. As far as I know, I should say, they have watches that sit outside the watches. They have people sitting outside the store watching what people are buying and asking them for a survey afterwards, which I thought was kind of interesting. And so that's the first thing. So I don't know how accurate it is. But anyway, the second thing is, like, for me, everybody needs a phone. That's a complete no-brainer. But not everybody needs a smartwatch yet, right, yet. And I still think, you know, as much as all the hoopla about wearables, it's still like you're almost a bit of a glass hole if you've got one of these things, right? Still there's that stigma of why the hell do you want, like, you know, you're a bit of a tool if you've got a thing strapped to your wrist. And it's not in tech circles, but in, like, you still feel like a bit of a dick, you know. And until it really mainstreams, I don't know.
That, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I mean, I see some people wearing them, and it's little hipsters that I see that are mostly wearing them. I don't see most people. The people I see that have them on, they aren't using them, which I find interesting.
It definitely appeals to me, like, seeing what my notifications are, but I wouldn't give up my nice Omega analog watch.
So that's my point too. I got the Microsoft Band when it first came out, actually in a cool customer support thing too. I started having an issue with it where it started like tearing up my skin on my wrist from the metal kind of degrading. I walked into the Microsoft store 2 days ago. I showed it to him, and without even trying to plead, within 20 seconds, the guy was grabbing another one off the shelf and saying, take this one. Just did a complete swap right there. So the customer service is awesome. But for me, it's nice. I love it for the fitness aspect. I still wear a normal watch, but I like the fitness aspect of it. And I like how it just does a couple extra little things, like when a phone call is coming in or when a text comes in. But I don't need all the interaction that it's got.
Yeah. I would like to go there one day. I'm just not quite over the hump.
Yeah, I don't think the form factor they've really nailed it yet. So
yeah, fair.
Anyway,
okay. So on to some other huge news.
Oh, this one nailed today, right?
Yeah. So we are recording this ahead of time, but Microsoft is looking to cut 7,800 jobs, mostly in its hardware division, and writing down I think almost $8 billion, 7.6 or 7.6 billion dollars from the Nokia acquisition. So this is kind of a big deal, right? It's huge.
Yeah. Billion here, billion there, a couple thousand jobs here, a couple thousand jobs there.
Yeah. You know, and so the news dropped this morning and the internet's going crazy and the armchair critics are out in force, as I like to say. But yeah, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, and I look at this as like Microsoft adopted or took on a lot of people with Nokia, and Satya seems to be getting pretty focused on what's important to the company. And he obviously believes that there was some alignment and some optimization to be done. And this is kind of a large one, but it's extremely sad for those folks that will be losing their jobs, of course. But you know, on the flip side, the glass half full kind of me says, well, you know, it's better to take the hit than to keep banging your head against a wall.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I see a lot of people are going a bit crazy over this. And I understand why, because it looks like Microsoft is abandoning their Windows phone. But I think, to me,
let's be fair, that is not what the news is, right?
Yeah, right. And that here's the thing.
That's the picture it paints, though.
Right. People talk about, you know, they've cut 7,800 jobs. Well, that was an acquisition of Nokia, and the phones aren't selling as much. And so that's like, we don't really need that. They don't want to be in that hardware business, right? They would kind of outsource it to somebody else if they're building the phone. So it's maybe that's a good cut down on that one. The Nokia piece haven't materialized. We saw, I think, news last week. Stephen Elop was left the company as well when he yep. came over from Nokia. But the thing with me that this really screams, it was a quote that and I'm just going to paraphrase, but what Satya Nadella, CEO of Microsoft, said was that it wasn't that they're dedicated to the mobile business, but it's not that they're dedicated to the mobile business on a single strategy of using their own device. They're dedicated to a mobile business and being in there for the entire ecosystem. And that means having apps that are on Android, on Windows Phone, on iOS. They're not just going to say, you can only sit there and do this stuff on. You've got to get this camera fixed, man. I'm sorry, but camera's blue. Everything that's metal is blue. Your white coffee cup is gold. Your watch is gold. Your phone is gold. And just to let you know, your fingernails and your lips look like you got pink fingernail polish and pink lipstick on.
I'm sorry about this. I feel so P. Diddy right now. I'm all gold blinged up. Anyway.
Yeah. So it's not horrible news. I think, and if you look at it from Microsoft's point of view, I think it's good news, because Microsoft is saying we're focusing on core of business. If you look at it from all the people who have Windows phones out there, they're not abandoning you at all. They're just kind of saying, hey, we're not dedicated to only doing stuff on Windows Phone. We're going to play everywhere.
Yeah, there's just no way. There's no nice way to deliver this news. It's going to be interpreted as Microsoft's abandoning Windows Phone. And that's what all the critics are saying, right? And, you know, and in fairness, that, you know, that may play out, right? We don't know, right? That may be a long-term thing. But I don't think that's the strategy at all. So it's sad to see those folks lose the job. And obviously the Nokia acquisition didn't play out as Steve Ballmer, who initiated it, had obviously expected, which is a shame, because I think that was a huge opportunity. But that said, I do like Satya getting pointy and focused on streamlining the business and getting focused on what's really, you know, a clear strategy and things like that. So I'm excited about it from that point of view, but I am a little bit bummed. As a Windows Phone developer, it does make me worry, right? It's like, if I was a Windows Phone developer, I'd look at it and go, this is not good news. So
this is not the platform you were looking for.
Yeah. Hey, I've done all right out of Windows Phone. I like it. It's my little app sort of ticks along and actually I must get ready for Windows 10 coming out. I know my app crashes on Windows 10, so I should fix that up. But I think I do like, you know, I like the whole He said, "We're moving from a strategy to grow a standalone phone business to a strategy to grow and create a vibrant Windows ecosystem that includes our first-party device family." So I don't think we're not going to have first-party devices. I think we're going to have first-party devices for some time. But for me as a dev, it's kind of it's interesting because I want to get my app running everywhere Windows runs. Mm. And Windows 10 is a big piece of that, obviously. So.
And iOS.
Yeah.
And iOS. Gosh,
if I get there, you know, I started down that path and I haven't taken it far. So we will get there. You know what? I just need to take like a month or two off and just make that happen.
Hey, I got a little follow-up thing to the Apple stuff. So this just hit my inbox a second ago, but the Wall Street Journal is reporting something related to Apple today. I think this is interesting. The title is Apple's preparing record number of new iPhones. Apple's preparing a larger initial production run of its next iPhones, betting that an even modest hardware change will entice consumers to upgrade and outstrip demand for the larger screen phones released later this year. It's asking suppliers to manufacture between 85 and 90 million units, combined with two new iPhone models with a 4.7 and 5.5-inch displays by December the 31st. Last year, they did the same. Their production run was for a little bit less, for 70 to 80 million. So this time it's for 85 to 90 million.
Yeah, well, there were definitely shortage issues in those last round of phones that came out.
And
it wasn't like, oh, we just can't manufacture them fast enough, that's horse shit. Like, they can make a lot of phones. and I'm pretty sure it was underestimated, the demand. But yeah, you couldn't get like space gray certain models in certain sizes for a long time. So interesting.
No, you couldn't. Yeah, it's pretty cool though. But
Yeah. Okay, so we've got some Apple news. We had some Windows Phone news. What else we got?
We got two quick bites, and then we can kind of start jumping into the Azure stuff. So we got one thing here where you found an article that talks about nearly one-third of all IT infrastructure spending is now all devoted to the cloud. So this is being reported by Network World and saying that public and private cloud systems spend grew by 25% year over year to nearly $6.3 billion in the first quarter of 2015. A little bit of money there.
Yeah, this cloud thing's a fad. It'll never work.
There's always money in the banana stand, man.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, this is fascinating. Like, it's so there's some research from IDC, and it released an assessment called Worldwide Cloud IT Infrastructure Market. And they do this infrastructure tracker or something like that. And this is where these numbers have come from. So we'll link to these off in the show notes. But, you know, I think it's fair to say it's going crazy. Like, the numbers are astonishing. And this is super interesting for enterprise, especially because enterprise is the one that's lagging here, right? Small business is all in on this for many, many years. Enterprises are still lagging. But this means that we're at the bottom of the hockey stick for enterprise IT spend, or just starting that ramp on the hockey stick, which is really exciting from my point of view, mm-hmm. being a cloud software guy, because that means there's going to be lots of opportunity for cloud software to really take off.
Yep.
And you know, hey, just personally, like Office 365, that's kind of the center of Microsoft's enterprise productivity, I should say, software in the cloud, and we're in a good spot. So it's going great, but looks like it's going to go greater.
Yeah, just going to keep going cloudy, which is a good thing.
Yeah, nice. All right, so I've got another one. Let's just move on to some Azure news. We've got a bunch to get through on Azure.
Okay, we can do that. Yep.
So there was a piece of news come out about Azure pricing is going to go up.
Oh, God.
Is this the end of the cloud storage wars, AC?
No. Why don't you go ahead and fill it to everybody and what's really going on here?
Yeah, so
everyone thought it was like, oh, my God, the Microsoft's raising their prices, but not really.
Well, they must feel really good about that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, we, you know, our cloud wars have mostly been about them reducing it, right? Now we've got to go ba, 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 da, ba, ba, da, and the opposite.
If they got to make, they need another way to make $7 billion from a write down on Windows Phone, right?
Ooh, yeah. You think Azure's going to fill in the gap?
I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding, Pete.
So, what's happening is they've announced some price hikes in certain geographies around the world. And so I think, if I'm not mistaken, the two geographies are Europe and Australia. Is that? I think that's it. Canada. As of August the 1st. So yeah, I think the price increases are coming. I think the background behind this, and don't quote me on this because I really don't know. This is not my neck of the woods. But it's all got to do with currency, I think, and adjustments for currencies devaluing and stuff like that. So they basically, we'll link off to this in the show notes, but roughly, you know, anywhere from, I think, 26% increase in, I think it's in, or 11% in European Union and 26% in Australia, and mostly due to currency fluctuations.
Yep.
Which will suck, I guess, for those geographies a little. But yeah, I guess we'll see the exact details in due course.
Yeah, but it's not, I mean, it makes sense. It's for currency changes and stuff like that. I mean, the US dollar is much stronger right now too. So it actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Oh, it also says here Office 365 prices will rise between 8% and 10% and CRM online by 10%.
So a couple of pennies.
So it's not just in Azure.
No.
But it's, you know, So when I used to work in Microsoft in New Zealand, we used to do this every couple of years. We'd go through and readjust all the pricing for all the products based on, you know, currency conversion rates and all that sort of stuff. So it's no surprise.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So I've got a couple GA announcements that recently came out. So Azure has now taken their new Key Vault service, has gone to GA. So Key Vault is a place for you to store your cryptographic keys.
Cryptographic.
And other secrets that you're using in the cloud in a very secure way. So developers and IT pros, we all know about when we use an SSL certificate or username, password, those kind of credentials. When we store those things inside of our applications, all the demos and all the samples you see, put that stuff in, like, say, a web config, right? And it's not secure, because if I can put it there, then I can get to where those files are as well, and I can access them as the developer, the IT pro, and then it's kind of like, well, you shouldn't have access to them. The keys should be in one spot. Then the app should have access to those keys, not directly, but through some sort of a safety mechanism. And that's what Key Vault's all about. It's a way so that you can have the applications would have no direct access to keys or passwords, making it really easy to create and import encryption keys inside of the Key Vault in Azure. So that has just gone GA for being able to take advantage of that.
Nice.
Another one that went GA is Azure AD Directory Connect. So that went GA. That is the replacement for the like DIR sync and password sync and all that stuff that we used to have. It's a very easy way to get to import, to have Active Directory on-prem synchronized with Active Directory up in the cloud.
Yeah, gotcha. Nice. I've got one that's kind of close to home for me, at least. The new Azure Authentication app. So this is for mobile phones. It's called the Azure Authenticator. And it's so what you do is, so when you're logging into, say, Office 365 using Azure AD, you can turn on multi-factor authentication, right? So you could, for example, you could have it call your phone and you have to answer the phone and put in a PIN number to get in. But one of the other options for multi-factor auth is doing another type of phone verification, but using the Azure Authenticator app on your phone. And so this is what I do for my Microsoft corporate login. Microsoft has turned on multi-factor auth. And so when I go to log in from a new computer to, say, OWA, Outlook Web Access, it'll pop up and say, hey, type username and password in, da-da-da-da-da. Oh, and then we need to do the second factor auth. And so what happens is on my phone, I get a little toast notification that said, hey, you're trying to log in. Do you authorize this? And you tap the little toast, and it opens up the Azure Authenticator app. And then it asks you to plug in your PIN number, and then you say authenticate or authorize. And then when you do that on your phone, then your login on your browser suddenly completes, and then you're in OWA.
Huh.
So you don't have to get a call or a text, you just get a little notification on your phone and you can put your PIN number in and hit authorize and away you go. And it's nice because if you're in a meeting or in at a conference and you're trying to get into your mail and for whatever reason it needs to do the two-factor auth, then you don't have to have a call come in on your phone, and you can just use this little app on your phone to jump in through multi-factor auth. So this is available to any Office 365 customer, right? You already have access to this. You can go in and set up multi-factor auth, and you can use the Azure Authenticator app to let you in. It's a really nice, you know, safety guard against just using username and password to get into your Office 365 system.
Is there a reason why it doesn't use like the standard like multi-factor auth that like so many other solutions have? Like they use the Google Authenticator app, or there's another app called Authy. Like Google uses it, GitHub uses it. How Microsoft account uses it?
Yeah, I don't know. You mean the code generators?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know the background behind that. I need to do some more digging on that. But I guess the codes are more like the secure ID fobs and things like that, right? With the rotating codes.
Yeah.
You do have choices in Azure AD multi-factor auth. I don't know if that's one of the choices. I'm not 100% on that. I'd need to double check, take a look at it. But I definitely know it can call you and it can pop up notifications and use the app too. You get the app on iOS, Windows Phone, and Android as well. So you're covered across all the bases. But I was doing the whole phone call, put your PIN number in, but I found it to be a bit of a pain. It's a good backup if you're roaming and you don't have data. Then a phone call will usually go through. So,
So when you're saying that with the Authenticator app, then does it still work the same way where you get a PIN, or does it just pop up the Toast notification?
You still get a PIN.
Okay.
So the Toast pops up, you tap it, it opens the app. It'll say, hey, somebody's trying to authenticate as you. Do you authorize it? You punch in your PIN number and then tap authenticate and you're good.
Mm.
It's kind of freaky the first time you do it. When you're logging into OAuth on a browser on your PC from home, say, and then you tap an authenticate button on your phone and then the browser completes the auth. It's kind of like this, like, whoa.
Somehow my phone and the browser are tied together.
I mean, I totally understand how it works from a technical point of view, but to people who don't know what's going on behind the scenes, it must look pretty magical. Like, wow. This is pretty freaky.
Yeah, I want to set this up on my Office 365. I'm terrified to do it because I'm the global admin for for Office 365, and I'm afraid that I'm not saying this is the case. I'm not saying it's the case with this one, but I did have two friends that had their MFA with Azure AD get screwed up at one point, and they couldn't get into their account. And I'm terrified of getting locked out of my email for an extended amount of time. So
yeah, that's that's a little tough. I don't know how you mitigate against that. Somebody smarter than I would know that, but you should definitely do it. Like multi-factor auth is the only way to stay safe these days.
Oh, totally agree. Totally agree. Hey, another one that we had, and went GA, and I'm gonna be quick about this one. It's called the application gateways. This is a scalable and highly available HTTP load balancing for applications. It provides application level routing and load balancing services to enable you to build scalable and highly available web front end in Azure, and you control the size of the gateway. It's very secure. Close integration with Azure services. I've actually lined up someone to come talk to us and do an interview on both the app gateway and the app proxy that we should have an episode published sometime late in July or early August. So I've lined up a nice interview with someone to talk about that. And hopefully we can work around schedules and stuff. I can get you to be on that one as well. If not, you'll at least get to hear it, but everybody else will get to hear it too. So I'm looking forward to having a guy, a gentleman by the name of Scott Hoag, is going to join us, really, really versed on this. And I've actually lined up another interview too with someone that we'll have in a couple of weeks. You might be familiar with the name Vishwas Lele.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to join us, and he's going to come talk to us about, for developers, Azure ALM. So if you guys have any questions about ALM with Azure development, so I've asked him, I said, you know, hey, I want to talk about the classic, you know, dev test, or dev, test, QA, production. How do you go through that whole life cycle for like web apps? What do you do with continuous integration? What do you do with having dev instances of, like, let's say you have Service Bus and queues and document DBs and SQL Azure databases and websites? do you have separate instances of everything, or does some of that not apply, or how do you deal with it? So I've got some of those questions. If you've got specific questions for you being the listeners, or you, UCJ, hey, send those questions in to us. Do it either through the contact form on the website, or just send it into us through Twitter. I want to make sure I grab those, and we're going to talk to Vishwas in a couple of weeks. So make sure you get him in soon.
Yeah, that'd be a really nice interview.
Yeah.
Okay, so Azure are up to more APIs.
Done.
Fancy that. So last week, or the week before, I forget now, we talked about the usage and billing APIs.
Mm.
So they've now come out with a new reporting API. So it's specifically around Azure AD in particular. And these new reporting APIs will let you call a web API, you know, standard old OAuth and REST type APIs, which will let you pull reporting data from Azure AD around things like provisioning events, audit events, sign-in events. You could pull in reports about sign-ins from different particular geographies, you know, starting to look for suspicious behavior. And then if you've got Azure AD Premium, you can get things like irregular sign-in activity events, all users with anomalous sign-in activity events, right? So Azure AD is telling you like, hey, this looks like an odd one, for example, like, you know, logging in from different geographies, like minutes apart, for example.
Yeah.
Strange little interesting things like that. Compromised credentials events. Possibly infected devices events. Like, whoa. How do they know that? I guess that data's coming from somewhere.
And see, this is the part, too. This is kind of a testament to why is cloud so interesting. It's because most companies don't have the resources to have this kind of protection and this kind of auditing on their on logins and on their systems. And with Azure AD, you're letting someone who's got a lot more invested, a lot more money invested in this, a lot very talented security professionals invested in this. So,
yeah,
really good story.
Yeah. Hey, they've got a C# app sample just up in GitHub that you can take a look at if you're a programmer and or a developer. Go take a look at that. This stuff's been available in the Azure portal for a while, but this is an API for devs to be able to grab the data.
Yep. So that's in public preview now.
Got it.
So the last one that I have here is that I guess this is kind of it's a little bit of news, and then it kind of like gets me on a soapbox here, but Azure is changing their support where you go to do submit support requests and questions about stuff. It's moving from the what they call the Azure Management Portal, which was at manage.windowsazure.com, and it's switching over to the preview portal, the Azure Preview Portal, which is just portal.azure.com. That starts on July the 15th of 2015. But I asked this question, and I got some shady response back from some people about it, but it's I remember when you were sitting at Build two builds ago, so like almost a year and a half ago, and they announced the new portal. They started showing off all these blades. They're putting all this stuff in it. You still see some new stuff showing up in the old Azure portal. You don't see as many things being ported over from the old to the new portal. I want to know, when the hell are we going to get rid of having two portals? This is starting to get a little annoying.
It kind of is.
And I know it takes time to roll off, but man, I mean, it's like, what's up with the preview? How long is preview going to sit in preview? I mean, we're taking a page out of the Google book on how long this stuff's going to sit around for a while. I asked somebody on Twitter,
yeah,
some people that are knowledgeable in Azure said that there was a reorg, there was a big staff overhaul, that some people got moved around and stuff. I don't know, man. I'm starting to get a little bit like, this is getting annoying to have two different admin tools to deal with this for something that generates billions and billions of dollars of revenue for Microsoft a year.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't use the new one.
Really? At all?
No. I find my muscle memory around the old portal is much stronger. Mm. And so I'm just like bouncing around in the old portal between doing different things. And I actually find the newer one, it's because I haven't invested any time, right? I haven't got used to it, but it always reminds me, hey, why don't you try out the new preview one? And I'll try it. But for the most part, I just bounce around on the old one.
So the old one I only use for Azure AD because Azure AD is not in the new one.
Oh, yeah.
But for everything else, I do use the new one.
Mm.
I force myself to use it. Like a lot of the stuff with websites are, I guess, Azure web apps now. Working with deployment slots, working with application insights, all that stuff is really only available in the new one.
Got it.
I'm not terribly a fan of this blade kind of dashboard, but I don't like the blades. So it's a little, I'm not a big fan of the UX and everything, but I mean, there's some cool tech stuff behind it. I know it's all built using, it's all client-side stuff. It's built with like 1.5 million lines of TypeScript. They're using Knockout for everything. So It's interesting. It's just, it's like Delve, or it's like Google Plus. I don't like that card style UX. It doesn't work for me.
Hey, well, you just have to script the whole thing then.
Yeah. Well, I do that, man. I use the command line interface and I just go all in Node. So, haha.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Me like it. Cool, man.
Cool. So that's our, that's a decent set of news. Apple Watch news, Windows Phone news, some cloud spendy stuff, some Azure stuff. Well, lots of GA things and a bit of reporting and auth.
Ta-da.
So, that is the news.
There you go, man. So there we go. For all the stuff that you heard, just talk about some Azure AD stuff and everything. Hey, stay tuned. Next week, we got an interview with Paul Schaeflein. It's episode 87, where we get caught up on a lot of stuff, Azure AD, a lot of new stuff coming soon. So
that should be a good interview.
Yeah, that's some good stuff.
Right on. Thanks, AC.
Absolutely, man. Good talking to you. Have fun at WPC. I will be sitting on a beach, not in the water, up in North Carolina, where all the shark attacks have been happening. So we're not allowed to go in the water.
Stay out of the water.
Hey, the good thing is that we actually got a big house, 16 people in this house, it's in-laws too, but we got a big house. And we got a pool this time. So thankfully we're on the water, but we have a pool. We just can't go play in the ocean. We can play in the sand.
That'll be fun. Yep. Sandcastles.
There we go.
All right. Catch, man.
Yeah, man. Have a good one.
Bye.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.